You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. Coming up, our guest says we're living in dangerous times thanks to the looming death of expertise.
First, how many scientists do you know? For a lot of us, the answer is zero. Our next guest says that's actually a problem.
She believes it prevents people from knowing how scientists do their work and, in turn, from valuing it.
She encourages scientists to become more involved in their communities and for the public to learn more about what goes on in the lab. During a time of divided public and political opinion on issues like climate change and vaccinations, she says bridging that gap could have a real impact.
Sarah Whitlock joins us now. She's a graduate student in molecular biophysics and structural biology at the University of Pittsburgh and a contributor for Stat News. Her recent article is called "A Lot of Americans Don't Know a Single Scientist. We Need to Fix That." Sarah, welcome to Central Time.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Well, you say that in general, scientists have not done a great job of communicating with the public. Why do you think that is?
I think that a lot of scientists have trouble communicating with the general public just because of the time required to do science. It's a lot of time investment. You spend most of your life in the lab working really hard. And so it can be hard to step away and take time to talk to the general public.
Do you think there's a skill, too? I mean, if you're a scientist, you probably spend a lot of time talking to other scientists who might understand more technical language than the general public.
Yeah, I think that's definitely a problem. I know, at least in my daily life, I do spend almost all of my time talking to scientists. And so sometimes I forget the things that the public might not know that I do know. And so that can definitely also add a layer of challenge to communicating with the public.
And in your article, you point out a statistic that most people don't know a scientist personally. What's going on there?
I think it's just, I mean, obviously, it's going to be a matter of numbers. There aren't as many scientists as there are in the general public. And then a lot of scientists are kind of concentrated in university areas. And there are a few schools, obviously, that are going to be in more rural areas. But coming from a background where I grew up in kind of a rural area in Kansas, I didn't know any scientists until I became a scientist personally, which isn't going to be everyone's experience. But it's definitely, you have to make an effort to know a scientist if you're from an area where there isn't a high concentration of researchers.
So what do you think changes, though, if you actually do know a scientist who's living and working today, not just Einstein, who everybody can name, but what if you know someone who's working in the field right now?
Yeah, so I think, at least in terms of my own interactions with people who've, you know, who I've been friends with for years, I think knowing a scientist can help personalize issues that are otherwise really contentious. So, for instance, talking about climate change with people that I've known, it's a lot easier to kind of communicate with them that this is a real phenomenon that's happening because they're more inclined to trust what I'm telling them, given that they already have that relationship with me.
Do you think people can also evaluate science better if they have more familiarity so that, you know, I mean, it's not as though people have the time in their daily lives to go look at, you know, different studies and see which one had the better peer review and which one was duplicatable. But, I mean, do you think that there is a baseline of knowledge that can help when there's more familiarity there?
Exactly, yeah. And definitely knowing a scientist will help you, it's going to give you a great resource for filtering through all of the data because even, you know, even research scientists obviously aren't going to be extremely familiar with every single field that's out there. But knowing one will help you to make that distinction for sure.
Well, what do you think better communication from scientists to the general public would look like? If there's an acknowledgement that maybe this needs to improve, what could change?
At least for me and for the students that I know, because I know there is, you know, there's science communication that goes on for sure. There's a lot of great work being done to write articles and to try to reach out to the general public. But I think kind of what needs to really happen is not so much with people who are already doing science communication, but maybe with those of us, including myself, who struggle to get the time to do science communication, to focus more on doing that and to maybe even take some time away from what we would be doing in lab to pursue relationships with people who aren't scientists, to go out and to communicate about what we're doing. Because there's a lot of pressure to get as much done as possible in science, which is understandable. I mean, it's exciting. You want to learn new things. But maybe upping the priority of our communication with the public would be good.
Is there training for scientists as you go through and get your degrees to learn how to talk to the public? Are there any classes that are generally offered saying, look, here's how you can talk about your research to people who aren't scientists?
You know, there. I think the number of those types of classes is increasing. I think maybe, you know, obviously I can't speak for every institution, But at least in my program personally, there isn't a class that we have to take about talking to the public about our science, but there are competitions that are starting to spring up about who can communicate about their entire thesis project the best in a short amount of time and things like that. So I think that those kinds of classes are definitely on the rise, but I don't think that every scientist for every program is going to be taking one of those in his or her training.
We're talking with Sarah Whitlock right now, graduate student in molecular biophysics and structural biology at the University of Pittsburgh. And we're talking about her recent article called "A Lot of Americans Don't Know a Single Scientist. We Need to Fix That." And Sarah, you mentioned that the science that a lot of us learn in school doesn't really go far enough because it focuses mostly on the conclusions of science. What do you think is missing?
I think what's missing, and what was even missing for me maybe until I was partway through my undergraduate degree in science, was more emphasis on the process of how scientific knowledge is discovered. Because there's so much scientific knowledge out there that a lot of times we're focused on learning all of it, but the process we get there is it's not linear. There's a lot of mistakes and mistaken ideas about how things work that we go through before we get to that final fact.
What do you think would improve that?
That's a hard question because we do want people to have a base level science understanding, so there does need to be communication of those facts. But I think maybe giving more example research problems and like walking through, here's a hypothesis and let's come up with ways to test this, and then going through like the failure of a hypothesis and coming up with new ways to test what your idea. That might be good to incorporate something like that into science education.
And some scientists now are feeling the need to advocate for their own field. And there's a march coming up, a march for science in Washington, D.C. next month. What are the issues that are being marched for, do you think?
So I think the issues that are most important that are being marched for is scientists really want to see their ability to communicate with the public continue, because there were some concerns with recent statements from the president and his administration that scientists wouldn't be able to communicate clearly, and we're seeing that that's a very important thing to be able to do, and also marching for funding for scientific research and policies that are based on evidence rather than, debate about facts.
There's disagreement among scientists about whether the March for Science is a good idea, or rather could it harm the causes of science and the idea that science is without bias and based in fact and dispassionate. Do you think that it gets in the way of any of those tenets about what science is?
So is this like, is it politicizing science? Is it going to make it the situation that we're currently in worse? Is that what you're...
Yeah.
So I think that is definitely a concern, and I'm sure that it will in some ways be perceived to make that worse, to make science appear more political. But some issues that are extremely important to science kind of have already been politicized, things like vaccine usage or the climate change issues. And so I think the scientists who are choosing to march think that fighting for those issues is more important than the potential downsides that could arise from greater perception of science being political.
We're talking with Sarah Whitlock right now, graduate student in molecular biophysics and structural biology at the University of Pittsburgh, talking about ways to increase public understanding of science.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think scientists and their work seem too removed from the rest of the public? What would you like to see to change that? Do you think science deserves more respect from the public and in the political sphere? Are you a scientist or a researcher yourself who's worried about the relationship between science and the public? Or do you see signs of hope? If you're not a scientist, do you know any? Do you interact with a scientist at any time in your daily life? Does it change the way you think about scientific issues? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking about why many Americans don't personally know a scientist and how that could contribute to a lack of understanding about what scientists do. And we're picking up the conversation with Sarah Whitlock now. She's a graduate student in molecular biophysics at the University of Pittsburgh and a contributor for Stat News.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Do you think science feels too distant from your everyday life? What would it take to make you feel more connected with scientists? If you are a scientist or researcher, do you do any kind of outreach? Do you feel like you could talk to people in the general public about the work you do and about science in general? And for anybody out there, we sometimes hear from our listeners, yeah, we want to hear more science news and science coverage and reporting. Do you want to hear more of that kind of thing? Do you want to hear it directly from the scientists and researchers themselves? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Take our first caller. Now we've got Debbie with us in Madison. Hi, Debbie.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
You know, I was thinking that, or hopefully, some of the changes that we're looking at in education, for example, in Common Core, where I know that's a controversial thing, but the whole idea behind it is to encourage students to think deeper and not so broad, but, you know, to really go deep on subjects, and I think that will help them value inquiry and maybe in the long run foster more interest in science and in how things happen and why. I also think at the same time when we're kind of cutting back on like the arts, that's another thing that really encourages curiosity and imagination and thinking about why or how things could be. So hopefully some of the changes that we're considering in education will foster more scientific thinking or, you know, curiosity about how things happen and why.
Debbie, thanks a lot for that comment. And Sarah, Debbie is feeling hopeful that broad changes in education could get at some of what you're talking about. And also it sounds like address some of the foundational aspects of how scientists think. What about that?
Yeah, I'm definitely hopeful about changes, too. I in no way want it to seem like a downer or anything like that. I'm very hopeful about changes to education and how they can foster great creative thinking in both the arts and sciences. So I definitely feel hopeful with Debbie, yes.
Debbie, thanks so much for that call. And we're going to move next to Grant joining us in Madison. Grant, hi.
Hey there, how are you?
Good.
So I only wanted to comment that I think what the guest is talking about is critical, but I think there's an underlying issue as well, and that's that I believe that there needs to be greater understanding of the function of the university in general vis-a-vis basic research. I think the notion that core value of the university in the sort of German university sense, Humboldtian University, that core value is very little understood, and the notion that research is kind of far distant, research in all fields, somehow far distant from reality is, in fact, in a way, the way the university is supposed to work. So I guess that was my sole comment.
All right, Grant, thanks a lot for calling. And what about Grant's comment there, Sarah, about people understanding how research works, the function of the university, and how it's all tied together?
I guess perhaps I don't understand exactly what Grant was saying, but he commented that research was supposed to be far removed from reality. And, I mean, I don't know, I would hope that at least the science that I'm researching isn't far removed from reality in the sense that I want to be coming up with therapeutics, I want to be coming up with cures that are going to be very much relevant to my daily life. So I suppose perhaps in other fields that might be the case, but for science I would hope that it definitely was.
Grant, are you still there? Do you want to comment? Do you want to chime in?
Oh, am I still on?
Yeah, you can go ahead. Do you want to respond?
Well, I guess I probably misspoke. I maybe over-exaggerated my point. The sole point was that, in fact, one major aspect of the university as an idea is to conduct research for its own sake, without a specific end goal in mind. Sometimes.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah,
Grant. Thanks for that.
Definitely, we want to conduct research for pure knowledge as well as for application purposes, because that is deeply important as well. So, I agree with that for sure.
So, do you think some of that big mission stuff could be improved upon, Sarah?
In terms of research for knowledge's sake?
Right, what Grant was talking about there, about, knowledge for knowledge's sake and not always having a utility at the end of everything that's begun.
Well, at least in terms of what I've observed during my time at research universities, I've been positively impressed that that is one thing that our research universities seem to do very well. You know, there's a lot of basic level, at least in biology, basic level research that's being done that we hope will, in the future, produce therapeutics, produce cures. But at the moment, we're just doing research to find out how things work.
Grant, thanks a lot for calling. And we go next to Randy with us in Sauk County. Hi, Randy.
Yeah, hi. You know, I found out something just as a parent of now a grown man who's a researcher, and that is he majored in organic chemistry and also statistics and things like that. And what I've found now, he also became an MD and has combined all of that and works at the National Institutes of Health and things like that. And being a farmer from, rural Wisconsin, used to think I knew, and a college graduate myself, used to think I knew a lot and blah, blah, blah. And actually what I found is that scientists, once they become professionals, are really good at what they do, and it's based on statistics and things that are relevant. And communicating that statistically is very, very important to them. And I guess my advice is that it's what's relevant statistically, and communicating that in terms of what actually is important, because it makes sense statistically, is what I think is important. And I don't debate my son anymore on, I found out he knows more than I do about things.
Randy, thanks a lot for that. And Sarah, what do you think about Randy's comment there?
I definitely agree that communicating things in terms of statistics is very important. So I completely agree with that. And I do think that scientists typically think statistics are very important.
Talking with Sarah Whitlock right now, talking about her recent article called A Lot of Americans Don't Know a Single Scientist, We Need to Fix That, talking about how to improve communication between scientists and the public. And you can call us at 800-642-1234. We go now to Ashley in Burlington. Ashley, hi.
Hi. I recently completed a NASA SOFIA flight as an ambassador in January, and I was calling that my job as an ambassador to NASA is to bring the knowledge and the research that is happening for infrared astronomy back to my classroom as a 7th and 8th grade science teacher, as well as to the community. So I just wanted to show, like, another way that NASA recognizes the need for research and outreach to the community, and looking at teachers as a way to bridge that gap.
Ashley, that sounds really cool. What did you do as an ambassador for NASA?
So in January, I went on two overnight flights to look at infrared astronomy via the airborne astronomy. It's a modified 747 called SOFIA. And so really working with the scientists to look at their research from methane on Venus and heavy water and regular water, that we were collecting the data, and that I was able to talk with the researchers.
Wow. And how do your students respond when their teacher comes back and has all this cool hands-on science work done with NASA?
I think they're like, whoa, that it's mainly just having the idea that my teacher did that. That it's, that
you've got street cred.
That I might not be a scientist, but that it's a connection to NASA. That I think sometimes what children envision is the scientist or the astronaut out in space,
right,
doing a spacewalk, that realizing that not all the research is happening in space.
Right, scientists can look different than you think. Right.
Yeah, and then to see them with my pictures and jeans hanging out, that it's a different visual than what you often think.
That's so great. Ashley, thank you so much for calling and sharing that with us. And Sarah, what about that kind of partnership between, people from different disciplines working in different fields, partnering like that? Is that one way to get at this question of communication?
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. And I really like the idea of partnering with teachers to help kind of amplify the dissemination of scientific communication, because the more people we have communicating about science, the better. And teachers are just a valuable way to do that, for sure.
What about, beyond teachers? Would there be value in, say, having, like radio hosts go work with NASA?
Oh, yeah.
Or, I don't know, construction workers, other people to get in and do some cross-pollination?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think as many people as we can get excited about science and, like, into the lab, maybe working on scientific projects, even for a brief time, just to get a flavor of how it works, I think that would be fantastic.
Let's take one more quick call here. Lynn is with us in Eau Claire. Lynn, hi.
Hi there. Good afternoon. I am a practitioner of the culinary arts. I'm now retired, but I get to teach my grandchildren the science of cooking and baking. They were excited to learn about yeast and that it's a living organism. And everything from sanitation to the science of nutrition is so involved in what I have done, and that's how I teach the next generation with something I can do.
Lynn,
and it's been fantastic.
Lynn, appreciate that comment. And that's a great point, Sarah. What about bringing science into things that we might not think of as sciencey? You know, baking, for instance.
Yeah, I think baking is a great way. If you know things about how, you know, yeast work and things like that, that's a great way. If, you know, people are interested in brewing various things, like, that's a great way to get involved with learning about science and how it's involved in things that you use and enjoy every day.
And, sir, just a couple seconds, but what do you think everyone should know about scientists? What do you wish they knew?
I think I wish that everyone knew that scientists enjoy doing a lot of the same things that they do. So, like, for example, climate scientists enjoy driving their cars around as much as the next person. So just to kind of keep in mind that people who are scientists aren't necessarily making dire predictions without feeling those consequences as well.
Sarah, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That was Sarah Whitlock, graduate student in molecular biophysics at the University of Pittsburgh, joined us to talk about why the public's understanding of science is so important, she says. Her article about that topic is linked on the Central Time Facebook page. Stay with us. There's more to come.